Hey, it's The Juice on Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3.com with Dr. Mike Gustafson and Jeff McGuire. I'm Aaron Dickens. Time for some headlines brought to you by our good friends at Specs Wine, Spirits, and Finer Foods. The Texas Tech Red Raider basketball team fell to Ohio State today, 80-73. Both teams shot better than 50% from the field. Not a lot of defense. Tech will be back in action, on Monday against Georgetown? Is that right?
No, it's the next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. Yeah, a week from today.
Mm-hmm. Team will fly home tomorrow, and I'm sure they'll get a day off after that deal.
The Houston Texans have benched starting quarterback Davis Mills. Backup quarterback Kyle Allen will get the start Sunday against the Dolphins. The benching comes on the heels of Mills' worst performance of the season against the Washington Commanders. The Texans are 1-8-1, which is pretty bad.
What?
Yeah.
Bad?
It's almost mock draft season there, Gus. Arizona Cardinals offensive line coach and running game coordinator Sean Coogler was fired after he allegedly groped a woman in Mexico City over the weekend. Mexican authorities were notified of the incident, which happened Sunday night, and then informed the Cardinals, who terminated Coogler and sent him back to Arizona on a flight Monday morning. In May, former running backs coach James Saxon turned himself in after assaulting a woman in her Indianapolis home. He was sentenced in October to 1 year in jail. That sentence was suspended, and he was given 1 year of probation. Just getting worse and worse there at Arizona. Seven Michigan State football players are being charged with crimes stemming from the assault on two Wolverines players in Michigan Stadium's tunnel after the two teams played on October 29th. That was announced today. Defensive back Kerry Crump is being charged with felonious assault after a video was released showing Crump striking a Michigan defensive back with his helmet. Defensive end Jacoby Windman was also shown in the video and is charged with one count of assault and battery. You too can join the program. We'd love to hear from you today. Let us know what you think on the Yates Flooring Center chat line at DoubleT973.com. Shelly has this 80. Has it occurred to you that Clint now has several days off to develop new troll ideas after your Leipold to Nebraska / Wisconsin smack talk recently? No. I mean, it has not occurred to me. I'm not worried. Clint is more dad joke than kind of super effective troll, if that makes sense.
Dad joke.
I mean, really the only buttons he can press are literal buttons of walking in Memphis, the fitness pizza in my mouth, flub.
See, and I thought that was a great line there.
Well, it is a good line. I just flubbed it. It's supposed to be fitness pizza in my mouth.
Yeah, what'd you say?
I said fitness this. I doubled the this.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Okay.
You don't like walking in Memphis?
No, I don't.
Yeah, oh. That's... Yeah.
Okay. Didn't know that.
That's why Clint has it set up as a hot button in there, whatever. Probably. You call that.
Yeah. I mean, it is, but Airwolf is also on a hot button. So,
and he never plays that.
Really?
Yeah, it's a shame.
Really of all good the song. Hot, why all, wouldn't you play it?
Of all the hot buttons.
So I continue to be just super intrigued by the situation in Mississippi with Lane Kiffin. Mm-hmm. The Egg Bowl is being played tomorrow. Even though at this point right now, our former colleague John Sokoloff is the only media member in the country, it seems like, only legitimate kind of credentialed media member reporting that, hey, this is going to happen. Even though he's the only one, I haven't seen anybody come out and say, outside of Lane Kiffin, I haven't seen any media types come out and dunk on that report. And that happens all the damn time, yeah. Gus. Sure. You know this.
Sure. It's everyone's opportunity to flex on somebody else's mistake.
Yeah, like the one thing that media members like to do is break stories. The thing that they like to do the second most is debunk others' erroneous reports.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that with realignment, right? We've seen that with all kinds of crap. And so for us to be working on day two of this, and there's been no Andy Staples, there's been no Bruce Feldman, there's been no Max Olson, there's been no George Schroeder or any of those guys going, hey, this is not quite done yet, is pretty telling. And it's also very interesting too, Gus, that for as much of a fait accompli as this seems like, and that's what the message you're getting from people that cover the Mississippi program and the Auburn program is that, hey, this is done.
Right.
Like, it's just, like, yep. It's happening.
Yep.
The train is on the tracks. It's going in that direction. There's really no stopping it. And yet, nobody else is coming out and saying it, which is weird. And it's almost like my suspicion is that the Auburn folks are sitting on it because they don't want to piss off the program. They don't want to overshadow Cadillac Williams. They don't want to overshadow the Iron Bowl, whatever, but very interesting kind of dynamic. And maybe I'm the only one that finds it interesting, or we are. Maybe it's a little bit inside baseball, but...
Yeah, I think that... I mean, in your point about the Auburn side of that and the Iron Bowl on being played on Saturday tells us that... My assumption is, at least, that this move won't be announced Friday morning. As you said, the Egg Bowl's tomorrow night.
What? That's
hard to imagine.
Plans of mice and men. Sure. Because it's like, Lane Kiffin is going to have a post-game press conference tomorrow. Win or lose.
I mean, you don't have to track tail numbers on airplanes either on this one. Like, no. Oh, Lane Kiffin was just seen at Circle K getting a Coke headed southwest. And there you have it. Because that's a little short drive down. I mean, they could be meeting in Podunk. I don't know. It might be hard. In that part of the world, it might be hard to meet at the Plainview McDonald's to pull off a deal unless they did it at 3 in the morning.
Because, I mean, Lane Kiffin is going to be in front of the media tomorrow in, like, 26 hours or so, 27 hours, whether they win or lose. And if they lose, that could be an all-timer of a press conference.
What if they get smoked tomorrow? Like, if this Leach plays their skis off and then he announced, and then he leaves for Auburn, and then this whole week is viewed as a catastrophic distraction.
I think that if they get their doors blown off, and, I mean, hey, that's what happened last week. They lost to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And that final score was far closer than it actually was. Right. That game was over at halftime. If they get their doors blown out, I think that you will have a very combative press conference. Because I don't think that the first question will, of course, be, hey, are you going to take the Auburn job? And
I haven't talked to anybody.
Lane Kiffin will give you some kind of, like, non-answer or something that might be technically correct at that very specific moment. But I don't think that they're going to let him just sit on that. You know, like, he will be challenged.
And he made the comment about, I'm not giving you a pine box moment. You put it on Twitter, dude, yeah. I think. That's why when he was engaging with all of that the other day, I'm like, you're doing exactly.
Yeah.
You may have given
us the Twitter version of Tubbs.
Right.
More tech talk next. No.
I have to say it. I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. What? I shouldn't even have to comment on this. I think I've said this over and over and over again.
That might be the single most, I don't know, maybe the weakest point in Saban's coaching history, at least post LSU, because you wouldn't expect Saban to break like that, because at that point he knew he was going.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted to get them off of his back. He could have just delayed and just kind of, you know, withstood the uncomfortable questions, but he relented.
Yeah, and I usually wonder what a coach what a coach like that in that situation is thinking about with regard to his team and his locker room. Like, is he trying to preserve it or, you know, keep him around for one more game, you know, which is what we talked about a little bit with the Kiffin scenario. Like, he's trying to get the, I mean, you know, is by pushing all that stuff back and pushing back to Sokolov and all that, how much is he trying to just hang in to get feeling like, hey, I owe them, we all owe this to this school to go beat Mississippi State?
Maybe. I mean, and maybe that's his intention. But by pushing back on Sokolov the way that he did, he just made it worse.
I agree. It's got a little Streisand effect to it.
Yeah, yeah. He brought more attention to it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I like John, right? I've enjoyed doing a show with him in the past when he's filled in, when mm-hmm. he was still in Lubbock. But it's like, how many folks are following him around the country?
Right, and that's what I mean.
Twitter.
It would have got a little bit of play on Twitter.
And it would have been over.
Yeah, but that would have been it. But by him bringing all that attention. It, you know, Kiffin's got a heck of a story. You go back 20 years, he's a 30, 31-year-old head coach in the NFL, and that flamed out, leaves Tennessee. I mean, and none of them have been just resounding successes.
Realize that if this move happens, which we all expect, he'll have coached at three different SEC programs.
Yeah. Then four counting the coordinator at Bama, right?
Right. Yeah, but then the head coach at
three. Yeah, head coach at three, yeah.
That's got to be a short list.
But the you know, a key part of his deal is what we joke about so often, the Nick Saban rehabilitation club, because he goes there and runs the offense for a while and gets his feet on the ground, takes his next head coaching job, because there was a point there where he was – you know, a bit of a punchline. Like, that dude had had more jobs before age 35 or 40 than,
right?
You know, and hadn't
all
really.
All it took was time in Tuscaloosa and a brief detour to Boca Raton.
Yeah, and to his credit, yeah, that's right. And I'm leaving those couple years out. But to his credit, when Saban brought him in, you know, Saban was like, hey, we need to start doing to people defensively what we're trying to stop. You know, like, we're facing this more and more. And you know, they, of course, naturally, they at least at that point in time, Nick Saban and the Alabama program went, we need elite receivers. So they went out and got like three eventual NFL first rounders or whatever. And they did a pretty good quarterback, and they changed the game. But before that, they'd always played a pretty heavy game ball control, yeah. You know, pound the rock kind of a deal, and then you know, they threw it around a little bit, but not in terms of what they become. Yeah, 4 or 5 years ago under Tua, and you know, where it was just like, you know, you're seeing Heisman trophies come out of there every year. And speaking of quarterbacks, and you mentioned Houston earlier, they desperately need a quarterback. If they pick first, what's their? Are they taking? Maybe they taking
Bryce
Bama?
Young.
Yeah, I think so too. Whereas the edge rusher is who everyone thinks is the best player and the best NFL prospect. That Houston move would be 100% need based.
Yeah, but I don't trust them to develop. I don't think that Bryce Young is so can't miss that he can. That his talent and ability can overcome coaching ineptitude.
Sure.
Right? Because, look at Trevor Lawrence.
And that's
Trevor Lawrence was thought to be as can't miss as possible, and the Jaguars are even kind of bringing him down to their level. Mm-hmm. And the Texans will certainly do that with Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud or, you know, whoever else joins this draft class. And so I just don't trust them. What's their offensive identity? Are we kind of putting all this faith in Pep Hamilton? I certainly don't. So they need they have much bigger problems than quarterback.
Yeah, and that's where surrounding him with some other pieces. And that's one of the tough things about this conversation every year. The worst team in the league drafts first, and 9 out of 10 years, I may be a little high there. They need a quarterback, right? You're usually not the worst, unless it's a situation where you've been really bad 2 or 3 years in a row and you get the quarterback early 1 year get your teeth kicked in, and then you get, and so this time next year they can take the elite edge rusher or whatever, but or another another couple of pieces. But the Houston to me is screaming out as the sort of team that needs to trade a pick and go get about five draft picks and restock in a number of spots. But that's I'd be lying if I told you I followed that closely, but it feels like Bryce Young is the best quarterback in the draft. And it's interesting you brought up Lawrence, because you remember after his freshman year, they were saying if he came out right now after his freshman year, he would be 1-1. Yeah. And he still had two more years to go. But 6'6 and rocket laser arm and all that stuff, I mean, that just shows you how tough that league is and how tough that position is, because he looked as can't miss. And by no means are we saying this like it's past tense and it's not working, but that just tells you how challenging that league is.
This in the Yates Flooring Center chat line. Does Tech basketball losing out to Kansas recruiting like Grady Dick and having McCullough transfer to Kansas reflect on our coaches? The kind of player is what we need. Coach Adams sounded flat in the post-game interview. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that you really hold it against many programs in college basketball to have a bad recruiting batting average against Kansas.
No.
That's a battle that you're going to lose 9 times out of 10, and people don't want to hear this. It has way less to do with your coaches and way more to do with what kind of sneakers you're wearing. Because the kids that play on the Adidas circuit in summer basketball, AAU basketball, the kids that play on the Nike circuit in AAU basketball, the really, really good ones, right? The really, really good ones are not coming to Texas Tech because of Under Armour, right? They're going to go to a Nike school, or they're going to go to an Adidas school. That's just how it works. Like, period, point blank.
Well, that's everything we've ever heard. And the other thing that's impossible to ignore is all those banners up there. Umpteen Big 12 championships, umpteen Final Four, national championships recently. And I mean, that's hard to ignore. I mean, they are a blue blood in basketball, and Coach Adams being quiet in today's post game has nothing to do with that.
More Tech Talk next. Hey, it's the Juice on Double T 97.3, brought to you by our friends at Specs Wine Spirits and Finer Foods with Gus and Jeff. I'm Aaron. The Texas Tech men's basketball team fell to Ohio State 80-73 today. Both teams shot over 50% from the field. Not a lot of defense there. Red Raiders fall to 1-2 in the Maui Invitational. They will come back to Lubbock and take on Georgetown a week from today. Texans are benching quarterback Davis Mills and will start Kyle Allen Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. The Texans are 1-8-1, which is not great.
And that's Kyle Allen, the former A&M quarterback, right?
Former Houston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Arizona Cardinals offensive line coach and running game coordinator Sean Kugler was fired after he allegedly groped a woman in Mexico City over the weekend. Of course, the Cardinals were in Mexico City to take on the 49ers on Monday Night Football. The incident apparently happened Sunday night. Mexican authorities alerted the Cardinals. They terminated Kugler and sent him back to Arizona on a flight Monday morning. You too can join the program. We'd love to hear from you today. Let us know what you think on the Yates Flooring Center chat line at Double T 97.3.com. How about this? We were talking about this earlier, and if this happens, I would have been wrong, which is not unusual. Stephen Sipple, longtime Nebraska beat writer, has written extensively for, I believe, the Omaha World Herald or the Lincoln Star Journal, one of the two major papers there in Nebraska. Longtime newspaper guy is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Now works for HuskerOnline.com. Sources, Matt Rhule, back in play for Nebraska.
I think he's a fit there. I'm not going to lie. And I think I've always felt that way. I think the very, very... when the day he was let go at Carolina, you and I talked about it, and I think you and I discussed it in the context of the college openings at that point, which were Nebraska, Wisconsin, ASU,
Colorado.
We knew Auburn would be. And I think my comment to you, and I don't think it was a big earth-shattering statement, but I felt like that he's regionless. Because I think you and I even joked about Brian Kelly, you know, suddenly having a Cajun accent.
My
family. You know, I want to even say that you and I had to look up where he'd gone to school or where he was even from. He's from the state of Pennsylvania, I think. But, you know, coached at Temple, had success in Waco. And, you know, I don't think he's bound to a region in a way that you go, wow, how is he a fit there? You know, I had a search firm guy one time was talking about fit. And he said, and he didn't even know I was in the room. He didn't know where I was from or anything else. But his example for a bad fit was Sonny Dykes at Berkeley, really? And that was by no means was he slamming on Sonny, but it was just a fit thing. Like Berkeley, you know, the Berkeley deal and Texas guy, you know, in a way. And so, but I look at Rule and I'm like, Matt Rule fits in a lot of places for me. And you know, I think he'd do a good job there. Now, what is that return them to national prominence? I don't know. Get in the thick of the Big Ten West fight? Yeah.
The interest, I agree with you with everything you said about Matt Rule. He is regionalist. He will fit in. He did a great job hiring a staff at Baylor that kind of fit that program's needs and kind of covered up some of his weaknesses in terms of, you know, in-state ties recruiting-wise. I think he has some name brand recognition that will help him in recruiting, because it's not like you're going to make a living recruiting Nebraska talent there. Mm-hmm. You've got to recruit national. And I think Matt Rule, as a former NFL coach, has that to some degree. And of course, you know, I fully expect Nebraska to be all in on NIL, and he'll have a war chest.
I mean, that stadium seats 90,000, right? I mean,
it's the only show in town.
Sure. It's a big deal.
My question about Rule is, you know, when he arrived at Temple, certainly there were no expectations. I mean, Temple,
historically
downtrodden,
bad,
afterthought of a program. And when he took over Baylor, I mean, they were pretty close to rock bottom after the Art Briles stuff, right? I mean, this was not thought to be some kind of easy fix. And yet, you know, in year two, he had them playing really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that you wonder, is he going to be given enough time, right? Is that fan base going to be patient enough if it does take a couple of years to kind of get it back on track?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they've got a bunch of talent on campus. And obviously they haven't had much success, and so it's hard to look at it and go, yeah, they've got the right pieces in play. I don't know that that's the case, but again, I don't think the Big Ten West is some just. I mean, we've seen Bielema at Illinois in his second year make them Big 12 West contenders.
And see, I think you Illinois, it has, again, they're a terrible program. They're a historically bad program that has largely been completely irrelevant in football. Bielema was able to turn them around like that in year two.
Yeah.
Nebraska fans can look a little bit south and look at Kansas, which was, we all know this, they were the worst of the worst. They were historically bad. And Leipold had them back in a bowl game in year two. And so if you're a Nebraska fan and you've suffered through 6 straight losing seasons, 4-8, 4-8, 5-7, 3-5 COVID year, 3-9, 3-8 so far. You look around at Kansas getting back on track in year two, and Illinois getting back on track year two, and you go, hey, we're freaking Nebraska, right? We're the Big Red Sea, right? We're the Huskers, we're the N, all that stuff. Get it done in year two. And I just wonder if they'll have the patience for it.
So it's funny you say that about Illinois. And that was the very first football game I went to. 1973, dad was there doing his doctoral work.
What game? Illinois.
Oh, I can tell you about this. I don't know the date, but look up 1973 Illinois Stanford. Final score, I think, was 30-0 Stanford. All right. And Illinois was terrible. Is that what you got?
24-0
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking 30.
Saturday, October the 6th.
Dun, dun, dun,
1973.
So I would have been 6 years old. But the interesting thing is, and this is where it sort of hits me, these two things. You just played that Michigan-Ohio State 1973. One of the key votes, swing state votes on the Big Ten thing was Illinois and some of that. But that thing prompted my dad to say, never lose to a school with higher admission standards than yours. And so,
more tech talk next. Hi, how are you? Good afternoon. It's Tech Talk on Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3.com with Gus and Jeff. I'm Aaron. We'd love to hear from you today on the Yates Flooring Center chat line at Double T 97.3.com. I get this in the chat line. Hey, guys, just wanted to say happy Thanksgiving in case I don't see y'all before. Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we'll be back on Friday from the Overton Hotel and Conference Center. But we'll not have a show tomorrow because, you know, it's Thanksgiving. Thomas the Train has this. So since expectations should be low, is making the tournament the high water mark? To be clear, you can have whatever expectations you want. I'm not dunking on anybody if they have high expectations. For me, myself, considering the injury to Faraz Amak and how young you are, overall, I have low expectations. If you make the tournament this year and if you clearly get better over the course of the season, I'm good with it.
Yeah, and I think that I'm with you there. And I think youth and the AMAC injury are two of the big keys. And, I mean, you got the head coach who's, you know, he's coming off a year in which he went 18-0 at home, right? So it's not like, well, Coach Adams has low standards. We know that's not the case. He's as driven as anybody. But even he said, you know, we're gonna have to be patient. And he said that after a win, mm-hmm. So it wasn't just like he's pleading for his popularity or his job or anything. He said, hey, these guys are young and they're gonna make mistakes, And they did that today. They got behind. They had a team that really played well, for sure. But as they were closing the gap and playing their way, been hanging in there and being competitive, Bacho had the deal with the blood and all that. I mean, that was a significant deal that he had. Sure. And he played through some crap today.
I probably would have missed today's show if that yeah, would have happened
right,
to me.
Exactly. That and a stubbed toe, right?
Yeah.
But you know, but they would have the moment, and then they got the guy going off for 30 points, and he's from Hawaii. You could see, you know, that thing's unfolding. You're going, oh, man, we got a story here. You got a guy that's playing out of his mind. He's a good player to begin with. And then when he finally misses a shot, you miss the block out. Okay, he gets a rebound. He gets a putback and one. And just, you know, it was just chasing all day. And that's a decent team. You know, it was going to take a really nice, I'm going to say your best performance. It was going to take a nice performance to beat that Ohio State team, especially playing behind like they did. But I just think that what we saw today is a little bit of an indication for what this season could be in terms of freshmen growing up and growing pains and all that. And I hope that there's the sort of progress that comes, with just age, just getting better, like we talked about our offensive line playing together and getting better and getting a little more battle tested, and then getting AMAC in there and seeing what happens. But the top of this league is really good. It's ridiculous.
The downside to this kind of season, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you could be comforted by the knowledge. That whatever lumps you take in a year like this with a bunch of young players, are going to pay off down the line. You know, you will get dividends out of this eventually, whether it's next year or 2 years from now, as they play more games under Mark Adams, as they play more games, period. But the reality of the game in today's age is that there's no guarantees, right? There's no guarantee that Pop Isaacs will be on the team next year, or that Daniel Bacho will be on the team next year, or that anybody will be on. And I'm not saying that they're leaving. I'm just saying that that's just kind of how it works now. Who would have thought 2 years ago that Kevin McCullough would be playing at Kansas? Not me, right? Not me. And so you just kind of have that, you know, guillotine kind of hanging over your head and hoping that it just doesn't drop.
Yeah, it makes it tough to play with a sort of developmental mindset beyond March. You know, well, this time next year we're going to be pretty good. You know, that's a tougher thing. You know, I think most football players probably hit a campus with a 2 or 3 year profile in mind, because a lot of them are resigned to the fact, oh, if I go there and I got to gain 20 pounds and put, you know. Basketball, those dudes are, you know, those dudes are wanting a little more gratification a little bit quicker.
Well, and I think they're far more used to traveling and going away from home and maybe joining different teams because of high school season and grassroots season. I think that they're far more, that's a lot more natural to them. Whereas with football, it's like you might have a 7-on-7 team, but it's not. That's not your focus. It's your high school team, right? And you're, more often than not, you're not changing high schools mid-season or mid-high school. And even beyond that, I mean, outside of quarterback, there's just not that many individual players that will impact your football results the same way that a basketball player would.
Sure. And I think it must be a tremendous challenge to deal with that. And I guess you just play the game, because you on one side you're always recruiting your own roster, and believe me, this conversation that we're having isn't because we lost today or lost 2 of 3 in Hawaii. This is just you and I think just stating the facts of the industry. It's a special point in time that we're in right now, and at least the way it's, you know, sort of not really regulated. We, Texas Tech, have to play the NIL game. Everybody does. And it's, you know, from all accounts, and that's not something that gets openly discussed. We're playing at a pretty high level right now. But you can bet that, you know, you tell me the University of Texas isn't playing the NIL basketball game pretty well right now? Come on. Kansas playing it as good as anybody. Plus, they've got the advantage of, you know, at least with regard to a McCullough, and I know that's got layers to it. But a guy like McCullough can go, yeah, I'll go there for my fourth and final year because I will go maybe play for a banner. You know, it's almost like baseball free agency or a dude near the end of his career going, I want to go there because play for a ring.
More Tech Talk next.